You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Coe, joined by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. Today, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, cover player performances from this past week, and give some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. Just hoping to finish some regular season strong in my leagues that have playoffs. They're all starting next week, so just trying to manage those matchups correctly and set myself up well for the playoffs too. I got one where 6 out of 16 make the playoffs, and I am in 7th place, and I believe I'm a game behind 6th, a game and a half behind 5th, and 2 games behind 4th. So it's going to be a stressful week, but that's why we play to make it into the playoffs and make a run. So it'll be fun, and hopefully it works out in my favor. How about you?
Yeah, doing well. I think my pitchless staff league playoffs start next week, and I think I'm in like 8th, but I'm only like a game and a half out of the last place, which is 6th, that goes to the playoffs. So kind of in a similar spot as you, really close to potentially, you know, taking a spot, but at the same time, still pretty dicey in terms of whether I'm going to get into the playoffs or not, just because of how close all the rankings are. So hopefully the team can pull it out well in this last week and in the regular season. But yeah, it feels kind of weird to as we were putting notes together, it's like, oh yeah, we've got basically 1 month left in the regular season. It feels weird to be that close to basically playoff baseball.
Yeah, the season ends a little earlier this year. I think it maybe is like the September 27th or something's the last day. So no regular season bleeding into October. And yeah, just 4 weeks to go after this week wraps up. So we are definitely in the home stretch.
Yeah, definitely going to be a lot of interesting storylines, even as we go into the last month, as we're going to cover it with news and notes. There are probably some players who are trying to make it back before the end of the season. Probably won't have any big impacts on fantasy matchups, but you know, definitely some real impacts for real baseball.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, before we get into that, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them: Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. We're going to start with injury list placements, and for a lot of these guys, it's probably going to be the last time we see them, unfortunately, this regular season. But we're going to start with a guy who might be able to come back, Pete Fairbanks. He is back on the injury list, dealing with some nerve irritation. So this really just sounds like if he can, you know, kind of get over it, you know, however it heals, he could be back before the end of the season. But we'll see. One interesting note there, too, is that the Marlins are saying that they're not going to pick out a specific closer. They're going to go kind of closer by committee. So if you're hoping to pick up a pitcher to catch some easy saves there, unfortunately, that might not be the case in Miami. Shane Bieber, he has a teres major inflammation. So I believe that's like one of the shoulder muscles. Essentially, he is going to be out for at least 2 weeks, at least not going to be pitching for 2 weeks. And then we'll see if he can even make it back in time by the end of the season. Mason Wynn, dealing with a fractured left thumb, he is going to be out for a while. Carson Wisenhunt is going to be out for even longer while. He now has a UCL tear. At first, they thought it was just an elbow sprain, but yeah, it's going to be far worse now. So he's going to be out for the remainder of the season and most of 2027 as well, if not all of 2027. Fernando Cruz, he's dealing with some right elbow discomfort. Initially thought the Yankees were a little hopeful about his injuries, but unfortunately now it's going to be sending him to the injury list. Jeremiah Estrada, just 1 month after coming off the injury list, is going back on it with right shoulder impingement. Adrian Hauser, dealing with a right forearm strain, is going on the injury list. Willie Adames, also dealing with a strain in his arm, specifically the left elbow. He's going to be out for a while. Brandon Donovan going on the 7-day IL with concussion. And then Michael Soroka, just dealing with injuries kind of this entire season, is now going on the injury list with right shoulder inflammation. So not a lot of big names, but certainly some that might have had a spot on your fantasy team. Adames might be the biggest one of these, but even then he was probably, you know, at best in the bottom half of, you know, second baseman or shortstop. So yeah, unfortunately, a lot of these names, while notable, probably aren't going to be impacting your fantasy teams in a big way.
Yeah, just a couple of struggling or not great lineups already getting thinner with Adames and the Giants and Brendan Donovan and the Mariners, you know, just continuing to kind of increase the appeal of streaming against those teams. I know the Giants had a decent offensive series against the Reds, but the names they're running out does not seem like a lineup full of major league hitters.
No, especially if you consider that they also sold a little bit at the trade deadline, so even their pitching staff's a little thin. As you mentioned, Carson Woods and Hunt going down, that's actually kind of a big deal for them, as is Adrian Hauser. So they basically lost two starters this week. And, you know, Woods and Hunt and Hauser are not household names, and they really don't have anyone else really behind Logan Webb at this point, I think, in their rotation that's really notable that, you know, you'd probably pick up on a fantasy team.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, some returns from the injury list. Tyler Glasnow back for the Dodgers. Rich get richer. He went 5 innings, 3 runs, 7 strikeouts. Hunter Goodman is back for the Rockies. You know, basically top three catcher back. That's always going to be a good thing for a fantasy team. J.P. Crawford back for the Mariners, kind of slotting back into the shortstop spot for them. And then Kyle Stowers back, I believe, in Miami. And he's going to be, you know, pretty reliable corner outfielder for them for the time being. But, you know, it remains to be seen whether he could find any of the form that was there last season when he was actually really solid for the second half of the season in Miami. In terms of some other injury news, Ketel Marte could be activated when first eligible on the 31st on Monday, but that's a very big if, of course, with Ketel Marte basically just kind of not being a part of the team while he's dealing with this injury. Robin Anthony could return this weekend for the Red Sox. Shohei Ohtani and Max Fried both could start this weekend for their respective teams, so that'd be a pretty big boon for any fantasy team that has either of these guys on the rotation. As we mentioned, J.P. Crawford is back, and that's because Colt Emerson also got season-ending wrist surgery, so basically kind of a replacement of Emerson. Hey, we got Crawford. Chase Lauder currently day-to-day with hamstring issues, and Tyler O'Neill currently day-to-day with shoulder issues. Ryan Helsley threw a bullpen session last weekend, but still doubtful to return by the end of the season. As I mentioned, it's only 4 weeks away, so even if you got a bullpen session started, you know, a couple rehab appearances, even if you're a reliever, and the season might be over before you're ready to come back. Aaron Judge hopefully could be back for the Yankees. It's basically been a lost season for him and for any fantasy managers who had him, but he is taking BP this week. You know, at least for Judge, I believe he was dealing with basically just a rib fracture, if I remember correctly. So, you know, not necessarily any sort of muscle issues, but nonetheless, if he's, you know, back, he'll be able to play, but it remains to be seen when that's going to be the case. And then Joe Ryan took live BP or is pitching live BP this week. Probably the Twins would expect to still send him on a rehab assignment. So it still might be a couple weeks before he's back in the majors.
Yeah, the Judge thing, you know, it's just slow developing, definitely slower than I thought. I felt like he would at least be back for fantasy playoffs, but, you know, it's kind of a unique injury, so you never know how it's going to heal. Tyler O'Neill does look like he's trending towards an IL stint for the Orioles. Blaze Alexander's on rehab, so they're not really one-to-one replacement, but there will be someone coming up to take some of that playing time. And then one more to add to the list. I was just checking one of my leagues, and Dustin May apparently first batter of the game smoked a line drive off his back, and he was taken out of the game. So day-to-day at this point. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the news is, you know, for him.
Oh, that's not good. But live reporting at its best, I guess. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for a quick news and notes segment. We're going to move into player performances, and we're going to be starting on Friday, the 21st. Who do we got?
Yeah, so on the 21st, What's a Polar Bear Doing was Ryan Clark's hitter recap for, of course, Pete Alonso. And we will be talking about Pete Alonso because it's been such a great stretch for him on my O's. In August, he's been really the best hitter in the league. He's slashing, as of today, we're recording Wednesday, 398, 451, 723. And in this one, he was 2-for-4 with a homer and 3 RBI. He's always known for hard contact. He's one of the best consistent home run hitters in the league. And after this game, he secured his 6th 30-plus homer season in a row, which would be 8, you know, if not for the shortened 2020 season. Pete Alonso is still making a ton of hard contact in his first year with the O's, leading to these great results. And Ryan feels like this could end up being his best season by WRC Plus and WAR, just because of how well-rounded he is at the plate. He went 4-for-4 also yesterday with a homer, so now he's up to 276 with 31 homers and 170 combined runs in RBI. And it actually is right now his best season by WRC Plus. I know we talked either last week or maybe the week before about kind of the first base one discussion in drafts next year. You know, Matt Olson, Nick Kurtz, Ben Rice, all kind of in consideration there. But is this really, really hot second half from Pete Alonso getting him back into that conversation? Or are you still more kind of on the outside looking in for him?
I feel like he's definitely in that conversation. I think the thing that really helps him is the average. He's got a better average than all three of those other guys that you mentioned. Olsen's currently at 260. Ben Rice is at 249. Nick Kurtz, there's not much to say because he hasn't played in a while, but he's batting 256. And he's got pretty similar power numbers, right, to all of them. So it feels like a four-person race for sure. I think Alonso probably just gets a little bit of a knock because, I don't know, maybe the counting stats aren't as well. Actually, no, they are pretty impressive. 89 runs, 89 RBI, 81 runs. So I guess I'm mistaken. You know, I guess maybe there's some element of maybe people remembering the first half of the season, how slow it came for Alonso to get going again. He does technically have the fewest home runs out of those four. No, I guess Kurtz only has 21, but, yeah, I mean, compared to Rice and Olsen, he technically has a fewer homers, but it's not too much that I'm that you would write him off as a, you know, a top three first baseman. So yeah, my opinion, Alonso is firmly belongs to that conversation. I think he's just going to naturally drop a little bit because, first baseman, as we've kind of discussed, is really, really good. It's pretty deep. And so I think naturally people are just going to gravitate towards other players. You might not see a first baseman taken in the first round, you know, next year. But yeah, for me, Alonso should be probably at least in the conversation for one of the first three taken off the board.
Right. And I should say that Sal Stewart is kind of in this conversation, but I was thinking of him more as a third baseman, you know, because you're not really going to play him much at first base given the lack of depth at third base. So yeah, generally agree with you. I think, like you said, he is a little bit behind the homer pace. Kurt's obviously hurt, but, you know, we know how he does on a per-game basis with power, especially in that ballpark. I think I might just take the approach of kind of all four of these guys are great. I think that they're all going to be super stable anchors at first base. And, you know, I'm not going to pick kind of the first one out of the group. You know, I'm going to see how the board falls. And if one of them falls to me or two of them are available, then maybe I'll just go for one of those ones who are left. Because I do feel like Alonso... Yeah, he's just a super well-rounded player. He's even chipping in with a couple steals, and it's been a couple of years in a row now of him hitting for a decent batting average with a pretty reasonable strikeout rate. So I think, you know, there's reason to believe that he can keep that up.
Yeah, and I think it's more likely that Kurtz is probably going to be the first baseman off the board, I think, only because he plays in a great park, assuming he stays healthy, right? He could have really, really monster numbers. Olsen, probably just because he has the more homers out of all of them. And then you're kind of in a competition of like, is it going to be Ben Rice or Pete Alonso that goes off the board first? And I'm sure, you know, Ben Rice, even though he hasn't had Judge on his team for most of the year, still has put up pretty good stats, you know, maybe slightly better. He has three more homers than him in the homer department, a little bit worse average. So I think I probably have Alonso over Rice, but I could see people, you know, going for Rice first if they think that, hey, this year was really good. Imagine next year when he's got Aaron Judge also on his team for the entire season. That could work out really well as well.
Yeah, and I do think the Yankee tax is, you know, is pretty much always a thing. So that, yes, that'll bump Rice up maybe, you know, just a couple picks or a half round or something like that.
Right.
So on to pitching on the 21st. Wesneski is the best day of the week, was Jake's SP roundup, but I'm going to be talking about Matthew Boyd. He obviously is of the Cubs, was at Seattle, so great matchup here, but a little bit of a frustrating performance. No decision, 6 innings, 4 earned, 6 hits, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, 10 whiffs, and a 33% CSW on 86 pitches. And it was really just the second inning that did Boyd in, giving up a 3-run homer. Disappointing, you know, with the Swatch archetype failing to take advantage of the cushy matchup. And this is kind of the latest in a string of rough outings for Boyd. Before today, actually, where I think he went 6 innings, 1 earned, and got the tough luck loss. But before that start today, he had pitched to a 6.12 ERA with only a 10% strikeout rate across his last 4 starts, and with 8 homers in that span after allowing just 6 in his first 12 starts. And he's only gotten double-digit whiffs just once over that span. So Boyd clearly not executing as well. Also, some homer luck evening out. I think he had 1 home run today in his 6 innings, which was still a really solid start, but not as much strikeout upside here with Boyd as maybe we thought there would be or as there was last year. So do you feel like he's still worth starting in like a 12-teamer, or are you kind of making a tough decision here?
Yeah, I think a 12-teamer, I'm out. Unfortunately, I think just there's just better value probably even on the waiver wire in terms of getting more strikeouts, in terms of maybe getting a slightly better ratios. I'd say, you know, if he has home starts, it's probably a little bit more worth keeping him. But again, this start was in Seattle, so it's not like it was a, you know, a much worse park than Chicago. If not, it's a better park, right, for pitchers. So even though he can't succeed there, it just makes it tougher for me to trust him. And then, you know, if there's a guy who's on your waiver wire, who's like a streamer, but has a really good matchup, like there's a kind of an argument to have a guy like him over Boyd. If, you know, Boyd just really hasn't had a solid start in the past, you know, month. I think he had a quality start two starts ago against KC, pretty solid. And then a string of a couple decent starts at the end of July, but, I'd probably be okay with cutting bait, just because there's probably better options right now on the waiver wire.
Yeah, it is about a 3-point drop in his strikeout rate from last year to this year, from 21.5 to 18.5, which, you know, obviously 21.5 isn't great to begin with, so that does kind of limit his upside. He's still got 8 wins and 17 starts, which is solid. I mean, the Cubs are a good team, so yeah, I'm looking next week, and it looks like he'll line up for a two-step home against the Brewers and at the Marlins. So I think that's, you know, tough to beat. But that could be kind of, if you advance in your playoffs, or, you know, you have the rest of your roto season, you know, maybe you move on from him at that point if it doesn't go, you know, fantastic. I benched him in one of my weekly leagues, you know, this week for some kind of higher strikeout upside arms, but I do think I'll have him in next week for that two-start. I think that's pretty appealing.
Yeah, did you say both those games were in Chicago, or
Marlins one is on the road?
Marlins one is on the road. That's still decent. Yeah. I do think, you know, you kind of mentioned, you know, he doesn't give up a lot of homers, or he hasn't necessarily given up a lot of homers, but now he has in his last few starts, which is a little worrying to see. But you know, if the park conditions are right, then that can help with the homer suppression a little bit, even if he doesn't have his best stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, late in the season and regularly, definitely see it getting a little colder, wind maybe blowing in, and he'll be able to capitalize on that.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Saturday. Roberting the spotlight by Kevin O'Brien, referring to Luis Robert Jr., who had a pretty good game back in White Sox territory, back visiting his old team. But we're going to talk about Jackson Merrill of the Padres, who went 2-for-3 with a homer, a run, 2 RBI, and a walk. This did come against my Twins, which kind of was unfortunate, but it was part of a big 4-run comeback for the Padres. Merrill was a big part of that. And he got his 20th homer of the season on Saturday. And yeah, it's kind of been a weird year for Merrill. I mean, last year was pretty awful. I think most of us could probably agree. He had 16 homers and 1 stolen base in 115 games, dealing with just injuries throughout the season. But even then, when he was healthy, it wasn't necessarily the best showing. But this year, he's had actually a worse average. He's batting .236 with a .695 OPS compared to last year. We had a .264 average. So a little bit better numbers there. Had an OPS above 700. But then this year he's had 21 homers and, more importantly, 24 stolen bases. So he's shown off the speed a little bit more this year, could be on pace for a 25-30 homer stolen base season. So at least on the counting stats wise, he's not doing too badly in that area. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Kevin O'Brien basically just says fantasy managers who roster him could do worse. And I kind of agree, right? There's Merrill's been fine. He's been a pretty decent player. I think just looking at where he is in terms of relative to his position and other batters, he had an ADP of 70 in this past draft season. Basically, he was the 47th batter off the board, the 16th outfielder off the board. Looking at the player rater, he's basically the 44th best bat and the 17th best outfielder. So pretty much dead on in terms of value. And it was kind of, you know, interesting to see that he was drafted at that spot based on last year's, you know, not so great season. So kind of just looking forward to next year at this point. Do you think there's more that Merrill can offer, or do you just think that he is just settling as a solid outfielder too, who can get you pretty decent steals and home runs and some counting stats, but the ratios just probably will never be as elite as we'd like them to be?
Yeah, I think he has a little bit more to offer in the batting average department. You know, hovering in the 230s this year is maybe not quite his true talent, but also I don't think 292 that he had as a rookie is his true talent either. So maybe somewhere in that 260 range. But I think outfield two sounds right. It kind of reminds me of like Randy Arozarena, right? He's 6 straight years of 2020 seasons he just wrapped up, and he's a .253 career hitter. So I think that Merrill, he has that 2020 ability, showing it now, and it's not like he's inefficient on the bases. You know, 24-for-27, he's going to keep running, keep getting the green light there. So yeah, I like him as kind of a stable outfield two, but if people you know, are pushing him up because he's young and was so great as a rookie. I might have to tap out just because of the plate approach. It's super aggressive. He swings. I don't have the percentile in front of me right now, but a 56% swing rate is definitely close to the top of the league. And he only walks 6% of the time and strikes out 25% of the time as a result, right? So that's going to hurt the average and especially the OBP. So I think I might steer clear of him in OBP leagues, but I think he seems like a pretty reliable outfield too in average leagues. And also it'll be interesting to see if the Padres upgrade their offense because it's been pretty rough this year, which is obviously going to impact his counting stats.
Yeah, not to knock the old dudes, but Machado has not had the best season. Cronenworth's been kind of hurt here and there. It's basically been Tatis kind of carrying the team for a little bit for the past couple weeks. So, if you get some more counting stats, that'd be pretty nice. I was looking at percentiles, though, that 94th percentile on his swing rate. So, he is going after it a lot. And it is kind of leading to a lot of whiffs, swings on pitches outside the zone as well. So, even though he doesn't have a crazy strikeout rate, 25%, that's definitely not helping the fact that his average is going down.
Right. He's at least very aggressive both in and out of the zone. So it's not like he's letting a lot of good pitches go by, but he is swinging at some stuff that's going to be tough for him to score up.
Yeah. All right, moving on to another 23-year-old. Painted Love was the SP Roundup article from Jake Crumpler, and we're going to talk about the title man, Andrew Painter, who went 7 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts, getting the win in the start on Saturday. The heater was even better in this start. He had 18 inches of vertical drop, which is 2 more than his season average. And the last fastball he threw actually came in at 99.6 miles an hour. So he was definitely amped up in this start. Changeup was also a little bit better in terms of velocity, got 80% strikes. And that was actually he tied in with his four seamer in terms of usage there. So, really good, four seam changeup and sweeper combo really to, kind of anchor this start. And those were placed really well too. His sweeper had a 34% or 35% CSW. The slider had a 41% CSW. Those two pitches, were just doing really, really well in terms of damage. And, Jake is basically saying, pick him up if you can. He hasn't had his second start. I believe that's tomorrow. I want to say, we're recording this on Wednesday. So I believe he's facing off against the Angels next, but we'll see about that. Nonetheless, he's been really, really solid. He was at the beginning of the season, it wasn't the best for Painter. I mean, just looking at some of these starts, he had a couple rough initial outings. Probably not enough for people to want to keep him on their fantasy rosters. And yet he comes back after basically a month and a half break between June and July and has been, pretty solid since that point. And, our PLV stuff grades really like him. He's got 120 mark on his fastball. So, they really like the fastball at least. And just two straight starts with this pretty decent fastball. Granted, the first one coming against Minnesota, the four-seamer was great, but the start in general wasn't the best. But now that there's been kind of two starts of this fastball at the little higher velocity at 97, 98, do you think that Painter is a must roster at this point, or are you still kind of waiting or maybe letting someone else kind of take a little bit of the risk here and maybe kind of wait till next year to make really the analysis on whether Painter is someone that you'd want to have on your team?
Yeah, I'd say go out and get him. He's showing improved stuff right now. His secondaries are more refined and his velo's up. So those are two great developments. And then you got these great matchups coming up, right? He's at the Angels, like you said, this weekend. And then it looks like at Arizona after that. Arizona and the Angels are two of the worst offenses in the league against right-handed pitching for the whole season. And then the Angels are the worst offense in the league in the last 30 days. So you got to feel really good, especially about that first one. I won him in some bidding, kind of like a Kate Anderson consolation prize in one of my OCs, and definitely made sure I got him into my lineup for that Angels start. Had another league where someone snagged him before me, unfortunately. But yeah, I think one of the biggest issues with Painter is that his fastball is hittable, and increasing that velo a little bit, combined with just relying on it a little bit less, I think it is going to go a long way for him. So yeah, I mean, we'll see how long it lasts, but I think just based on what we've seen so far in these last couple starts, he's clearly going well right now. And I think this time of year, I lean a little bit more on, recent form as opposed to maybe projections or season-long numbers or that type of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we are seeing some different stuff with that fastball, right? It is coming a little bit harder, and it's got more drop on it with that induced vertical break. So it has improved. And, you know, he kind of mentioned, you know, Jake mentioned this in the article as well, that Pedro kind of feels like this is the best his fastball has felt since Tommy John. So part of it, too, is maybe just getting over the hangover of that surgery and finally feeling like more like himself and being able to use that pitch effectively. So we'll kind of see how the rest of the season goes for him. Obviously, two really good matchups, as you mentioned, coming up. And it'd be nice to see kind of how this last month and a half looks for him in terms of his stats. I picked him up in, I think, the second to last round of my pitcherless way too early mock, basically right after this start happened. So I feel like, hey, you know, if he's just a really solid, like, 22nd round pick that ends up being, you know, basically value of like a top 50 pitcher, that's a pretty good steal. And I imagine he's going to shoot up drafts a lot more come next spring.
Yeah, if he finishes strong, I'm a little scared to see what the ADP is going to be for a guy who has a 6 ERA right now. Not saying this is true talent, but it can be a little scary to click on, you know, inside like the top 200 or something like that. That's where it ends up.
Yeah.
So going to the 23rd, on the hitter side, keeping with the rookie discussion, give me some of your Tatis. So it's Kyle Stanzl's hitter recap, but I'm going to be talking about Pedro Ramirez. He's a Cubs rookie prospect. He was 3-for-6. With a homer, 3 runs, and 5 RBIs in this blowout win for the Cubs over the Mariners. It was off of a position player, but he put an exclamation point on their blowout victory with a grand slam in the 8th and ended the day with 3 knocks and 5 RBI. At only age 22, he's done a great job giving the Cubs some depth at the bottom of the lineup, currently slashing .291, .351, .437 with 3 homers and 7 steals in 57 games since the promotion. So about a third of the way into the season, I think he's got second and third base eligibility in most leagues, so some nice versatility. Is this enough to get on your radar in shallower leagues as maybe a bench bat, or are you just not really too interested in Ramirez?
I think he's probably on the radar. I probably don't put him on the team in a 12-teamer. I mean, what is impressive is the ratios are really solid from him, that the counting stats have actually been pretty decent. But I don't know if that's enough to be like, oh yeah, I would like him as a bench bat. And I need to look at what his lineup spot has been. He's still, yeah, kind of bottom third of the lineup, occasionally bumped up to second here and there, but overall has been batting in that back third. So I think it's hard for me to, you know, pick up a guy who might not get as many plate appearances, especially come playoff time. In you know, a little bit shallower league like that, but it's at least encouraging to see that he's doing this pretty well as a rookie, and you know, that's maybe some intrigue for next season if he does manage to snag a spot with the Cubs. Power numbers wise, I'm just looking at his minor stats. You know, not a ton there, so he's really going to get more of his value probably from being just average, getting a high average and decent stolen base numbers. So I think even next, looking to next year, he's still probably a guy that, you know, you put on your team at the end of the season, at the end of the draft, if you just need some speed.
Yeah, I think with you generally, the ceiling is a little bit low, at least at his current skill set. Obviously, he's only 22, so, you know, could still develop. He hasn't hit for a ton of power, you know, just shown by the 3 homers in 57 games, and one of them being off a position player, obviously. I added him in an OC because my only offensive needs are steals and batting average, and it's kind of tough to get steals, especially out of your CI spot. So, you know, he kind of felt like a natural fit. But yeah, I think that it's more of a team need discussion. But if you need someone who's positionally versatile, you know, on your bench, or maybe you have a second baseman or third baseman that you don't love and you'd like an alternative, you know, I think that he's worth looking at. He's been playing every day since Dansby Swanson went down for the Cubs, and I don't think he's coming back, you know, right around the corner. Matt Shaw might be, which could cut into his playing time, but he's still like on a rehab, and it's not like he's, you know, an everyday guy at this point. So yeah, I think that he's an interesting guy to kind of have on your watch list or maybe the back of your roster.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for guys that both have CI and MI eligibility like he does. They just gives him so much more flexibility in, you know, those types of leagues where you have those roster positions, because he can essentially play 4 different spots, you know, or 5 different spots on your team, which, yeah, does help a little bit in having this, that type of player who's at least good in two categories, right? I think that's where it becomes more effective.
Yeah, definitely. On the pitching side, Cal Ripken was Nick's SP roundup for Cal Quantrill, who is having a great run right now. But I'm going to be talking about someone who's not having a great run, but sure did earlier in the season. That's Jose Soriano, now of the Blue Jays, at the Yankees in this one and took the loss. 5 innings, 5 earned, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 7 strikeouts, 10 whiffs, and a 24% CSW on exactly 100 pitches. And this was kind of a middling start, but turned into a careful acre situation where he allowed 3 straight singles to start the 6th inning and then got pulled with the bases loaded. All 3 runners that he left, unfortunately, the reliever did allow them to score. But this still wasn't really the best we've seen from Soriano, even with that bad luck aside. Curveball's not really executing as a CSW machine, and the splitter and four-seamer were featured too often at 40%, but only hitting the zone or ending up at strikes 54% of the time, which is just not really a high enough rate there. And then Soriano's just kind of continuing this hipster status where he's just driving you crazy since his great run early in the season. And we've definitely had this conversation a couple times throughout the year, but it's been some decent starts and then another steady decline here from Soriano, and the velo is down about a tick. So with this diminished velo and the bad results, are you ready to be done with him now? I think I might be getting close to that point.
Yeah, I probably am. Although weirdly enough, I did pick him up as I think my SP4 or maybe SP5 in that mock draft that I did. Which now that I think about it, maybe I regret just a tiny bit, but I don't know. There's some interesting stuff with him. If the strikeout rate does kind of go up, that'd be nice to see. Basically saying if that continues next season. So, but I think this season for now, it probably doesn't hurt to drop him. If there's just some more attractive streaming options, like you mentioned, like we're in the playoffs at this point. So, you might as well take what you can get in those types of scenarios where you're kind of living week by week. And if there's a streamer that you like better than Soriano, sometimes it's just better to cut bait on a guy like that. But I do kind of hope that he does find something a little bit, just so that, we can kind of believe that this season was not a complete fluke, that it wasn't just like a really good, 3 months of baseball for Soriano. Because I think that, there's definitely some stuff there that could be real. Like if the fastball velocity kind of sticks around, if that curveball is able to get more whiffs like it has earlier this season, it'd be nice to see something like that. But I think when it comes to fantasy playoff baseball, as soon as one guy just doesn't have it anymore, I'm pretty good with cutting bait.
Yeah, the 11% walk rate, right, which is right in line with his career mark, and the 1.29 whip is just pretty killer. I think Toronto maybe can figure out something with him in the long term. They do really well with these type of guys. It seems like Dylan Cease obviously has really unlocked something, even though he's a guy who's not known to have polished command. So maybe he'll be decent next year. It does feel like he's kind of fading a little down the stretch here. I have him in a couple of head-to-head leagues, and yeah, I feel like this start coming up this weekend, home against the Mariners before my playoff start, is kind of just like a last chance. If he can flash something, I'll roll with him next week at the Royals, which is kind of a middle of the road, I would say, matchup. They've been playing better lately, so they're not, a complete doormat, but still not great. But yeah, it's just, I feel like his velo has been down a tick to 2 ticks, like pretty much every start lately, and the results are pretty rough too. So definitely some concern on my end.
Yeah, I'm curious if that curveball is kind of failing him a little bit, just because it's losing a little bit of spin compared to his season-long numbers. Maybe the break on it just isn't as good as it has been in the past, which is just leading to less whiffs, and just for how he relies on that pitch so much, right? If that's just not working for him, then it's a little tougher if you suddenly lose one of your best pitches, and now you're kind of reduced to 2 really good pitches. It's going to be harder for any sort of pitcher to work in that sort of framework.
Right, and that's his only breaking ball, really. He throws a slider under 5% of the time, so the curveball is definitely a key part of the arsenal.
All right, moving on to Monday. Thanks to the ex Lyles by Ryan Amore for the Hitter Recap article. And we are going to talk about Dalen Lyle, who went 3 for 5 with 2 runs, a homer, 5 RBI, and 1 stolen base. A very nice combo meal to end a 14-game power outage for Lyle. And he's shown some promise, right? Last year, I think he had a really good second half of the season, had a .299 average with 9 homers and 8 stolen bases. Of course, this year, this Washington team, we've kind of been talking about them the entire season, just randomly has really good offense. But Lyle, instead of kind of following along with the rest of the team, he hasn't been as stellar. 249 average, only 13 stolen bases in 40 more games compared to last season. The power is still there. He does have 17 homers, so still might reach 20 by the time that the season is over. He has struggled a little bit at the plate, a little bit more this season. The strikeout rose 3%, so not crazy numbers, but nonetheless, a little bit higher. Part of that might be just a change in strategy as he is barreling the ball a bit more too. And with Lyle, he doesn't have loud tools. You know, he doesn't necessarily have like the greatest bat speed, the greatest exit velocities. I mean, he's just pretty much known for being really fast. So he's also a guy who, in order to hit homers, just needs to pull the ball in the air. I mean, that's kind of where he's found a little bit of success with that 17 homers so far. But still, for a guy like Lyle, I don't think power is everything. It'd be nice if he could get the average up, right? Might not expect him to be a 299 guy, but, you know, 270s would be pretty nice for an outfielder like him. And part of the thing, too, just looking at his stats, is that he just chases a lot more than he should. I think his chase rate, like, went up 10% this season or something like that. So definitely maybe some form of strategy change resulting in, hey, more power, but it's also just leading to less plate discipline, which you don't love to see. Ryan basically has Lyle as a borderline option in 12-teamers. For you, is he a guy that you'd leave on the waiver wire, or does the power-speed combo still kind of work for an outfielder three in those type of shallower leagues?
Yeah, I think three outfield, I mostly have been leaving him on the waiver wire. If it was a five, you know, he'd be pretty easy to have and start most weeks. But yeah, he's definitely been a watchlist guy for me in a couple of leagues for weeks, if not months. But I just don't think there's enough in the profile for me to bring him on. Like you said, the chase rate stuff, that's what I was going to talk about. It's really concerning. He's only swinging overall 4% more this year, but he's chasing 11 percentage points more. So basically all of his increased swing rate is just coming from the chases, and that's really not what you want. He looked like a pretty, you know, he had a pretty decent approach last year, and it's really regressed. And he's also hitting the ball in the air a lot more, which with his kind of mediocre contact quality, I feel like it's really going to eat into his batting average, which, you know, of course we do care about for fantasy. So yeah, I'm a little concerned with, you know, I feel like it hasn't been like a terrible season, but I do feel like there's been a little bit of regression kind of in his skills from his rookie year to his second season.
Right. Like you can point to like, hey, he's got more power this season, which is great. But yeah, that average dropping by 50 points is that's a tough thing to stomach. And yeah, it'd just be nice if, frankly, just get on base more, right? Because then he can take advantage of that speed. Like the OBP has dropped by 50 points as well. And that's pretty much because of that average drop. So yeah, it would be nice if he could get on the base path just a little bit more.
Right. And he's just hitting a ton of fly balls. Like last year he hit a ton of line drives. I feel like he's replaced them mostly with fly balls, and that's been, you know, not the most fruitful change for him.
Yeah. All right. The Secret World of Imbalanced Zach is the SP Roundup article from Nick. We're going to talk about Parker Messick instead, though. Going up against the Angels, got a win in this one. Six innings, one earned run, three hits, one walk, and four strikeouts. Nick is kind of playing around. Is Messick an ace? And you look at those numbers that he has this season, and it's really, really solid. 2.5 ERA, 1.01 whip, 26% strikeout rate, and almost a full season of play, 155 innings total. And yet at the same time, there are some issues because Messick's fastball didn't get a single whiff. It was a little bit lower on the velo as well. He did bring back the cutter a little bit in this one. Although weirdly enough, I'm looking at the game log, it doesn't actually record a single cutter. So maybe Statcast is kind of confusing the cutter and the four seamer together, but, nonetheless, he's still putting up good results. Again, this was against the Angels, so kind of expected. But yeah, Nick's kind of ultimate analysis that, you know, he's still a little bit of like a Holly, still a really reliable pitcher, but not necessarily an ace. And I think just in the grand scheme of things, that probably doesn't matter, you know, too much in terms of fantasy construction. I think the only thing I can think about is like, you know, would you want to have Messick as like your second best pitcher on your team? Or do you think he's just not there yet and you still like to have a little bit of, you know, higher value pitchers in front of him on your team construction?
Yeah, I think I'd be comfortable with it for the rest of the season for sure. I don't know if I'm drafting him as my SP2 next year. The recent form is pretty incredible. He's been great all season. He's fifth among qualified pitchers in ERA. So obviously he's just been pretty locked in all season. I was a little worried about the workload. He's at a career high from an innings perspective, and obviously Cleveland's hoping to play in the playoffs too. But they're in a battle, so they can't really afford to, you know, let their best pitcher, shorten his workload. So, and he did at least throw, I think, over 130 innings across all levels the last couple of years. So it's not like he's way over his head from a workload perspective. So yeah, I feel like he's in a groove and his stuff is holding up pretty well. So I feel pretty good about it. In terms of like next year, I'd be worried that the 80% strand rate, left on base rate, isn't going to stick. It looks like he's 11th out of 54 qualified pitchers in that rate. So it's something that I would expect to fall into kind of the mid 70s at best. So that's going to hurt the ERA a little bit, but hey, he's a lefty with a well-rounded arsenal. He doesn't issue a lot of free passes and he's in a great pitching development organization. So I feel like the context here is pretty good.
Yeah, this start specifically, he went almost 90% four-seam changeup, pretty much. So even though he does have that little bit more well-rounded arsenal, in this start specifically, you know, he went very much four-seamer changeup. But he does feature a slider or a sinker sometimes. But he really relies on that fastball or that four-seam a lot just to get through games. So, you know, one of these guys who's, you know, knows how to work with just two pitches, more or less. But I am curious if that's going to come back and bite him next season. If he is a lefty with the changeup, but if that's all he has, then, you know, it's a little bit tougher to, you know, believe that the formula will last for the next season.
Yeah, and he's gained a tick and a half of velo from last year to this year, and I do think that is a big deal in terms of what his ceiling is. So I'd be looking for, you know, needing to see that stick to continue to think of him as like an SP2-3 type guy. On to the 25th, Luis Yourself was Griffey Geis's hitter recap for Luis Garcia, a new Yankee, but I'm going to be talking about Tristan Peters of the White Sox, outfielder. He's been on a great run lately in this one. He was 3-for-3 with a double homer, 2 runs, 3 RBIs, and 2 walks. It was 2 extra base hits yesterday in the White Sox 11-7 win over the Rangers, including a homer that was gone in all 30 parks. And Tristan Peters, maybe the most surprising all-star this year. He's 26. He's kind of come out of nowhere to be a solid part of this really solid White Sox lineup. He's slashing 277, 342, 460 with a 125 WRC plus through almost 400 plate appearances. And he had homers in 4 straight games after going long in this one. He isn't a zero in any category, but I think it's only like 11 homers, 7 steals. So not a ton of fantasy upside, but is he doing enough for you to add? Or how do you think about him versus someone like Lyle, who maybe we feel like is just kind of on the fringe?
Yeah, I think he is maybe a little bit lower than Lyle just because he's not going to get as many counting stats as Lyle, I think, just, you know, in the same context. I mean, he is at 400 plate appearances on the season. So, you know, it's not like he hasn't that these are smaller sample sizes and he still only has like 11 homers and 7 stolen bases. So I think I like Lyle a little bit more than Peters, even though the average is better for Peters. Yeah, I think that's all I can really say. I mean, it is impressive that he at least is displaying really good plate discipline. The BABIP scares me a little bit. And this, you know, recent power, string of powers is impressive for sure. But he, you know, also had a bunch of games with just no hits prior to that. So the consistency is probably also a little bit of an issue for me. But, you know, nonetheless, good to see him get a little bit of shine and, you know, hopefully he's able to end the season well.
Yeah, I think it's more of a 5 outfielder play too. I have him probably similar to Lyle, but not really considering either one of them. It is Peters has played against the last 2 lefties, but for his career, it's only 43 at bats, so a very small sample, but he has 0 extra base hits and a 6 WRC plus against lefties. So he is, you know, definitely has the profile of a future platoon bat. So that does definitely cap the upside a little bit. Going to the pitcher side on the 25th, Jacob's ladder fall was Nick's SP roundup, which was for Jacob DeGrom, of course, who absolutely got torched in the first inning, hurt me in a couple of leagues. We'll see what becomes of DeGrom after another bad start. But I'm going to be talking about Chris Bassitt. He has come off the IL and given the Orioles a couple of really solid starts. And this was another one here against the Cardinals. He made it into the 7th inning, and actually his velo was up. He was hitting 93-94, which is 1-2 ticks up. a lot of sinkers for called strikes, like we've come to expect from Chris Bassitt when he's going well, and also mixing in cutters and curveballs and a little bit of everything else. It was a nice matchup against the Cardinals in St. Louis. Nice batted ball luck, and the lineup kind of rolled over a little for him in a blowout. Nick feels like this is just more of a gold star where he, you know, had a good outing, but don't buy into it. And it is at the A's next, which is a really tough matchup, even if the lineup's not great. Let's say he makes it through that okay. With this increased velo, are you interested in him down the stretch as a streamer or not really, just given the, especially the whip risk and low strikeout upside?
Yeah, I think for me, he's still probably worth looking at in terms of streaming. Like, yes, the strikeout numbers haven't been very solid for the season as a whole. But if you take the last three starts, so basically since he's come off the IL, like the strikeout numbers haven't been awful. Yes, he is giving up, you know, more runs than I think you'd like. But, you know, last couple seasons, or really just the last four seasons straight, he's basically had like a 22% strikeout rate. And I think that's decent enough to be considered for streaming. You know, he's definitely not on a fantasy team for, you know, the long term. But, you know, we're talking about the end of the season. What does long term even mean anyways? If he has a good matchup, I think it's worth taking a look at him.
Yeah, I think if you're not too worried about whip, I'd say go for it. But he does have a long track record of having a bad whip, even in his better seasons. It's looking like after the A's, it's home against the Red Sox, home against the Guardians, and then maybe at the Mets. So, you know, the Red Sox are obviously have been playing well for a couple months, but their offense isn't like, you know, untouchable. So, yeah, I think that those matchups, if you're looking for maybe a quality start or a decent ERA, I think that he is worth checking out. But I don't think he's a guy where you need to agonize about, ah, should I hold him if he has a good start? I think it's more of a one day add and drop type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. No one will be fighting you, even if Bassitt has a good start, because there's just probably going to be other players that are more attractive than him in some of those spot start situations.
Yeah, and I would want to see the velo, you know, staying at this increased rate this weekend to feel good about picking him up.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Wednesday for hitters. We are going to talk about Hector Rodriguez, who went 3-for-6 with 2 runs, 2 RBIs, and 2 homers. He plays for the Reds, and prior to this game, Rodriguez had never hit higher than 6th, but on Wednesday, he batted leadoff and made the most of that opportunity, helping the Reds put up a 7-run inning in the 9th to win the game 10-9 over the Giants. So really impressive. And this game was not in Great American Ballpark. It was actually in Oracle Park, which is kind of impressive that he managed 2 homers in Oracle Park as a lefty. The first one came off Logan Webb at 103 miles an hour off the bat, and the second one was a screamer, 115.2 miles an hour. All 4 of his batted balls were over 100 miles an hour. So clearly has the power. In AAA, he hit 27 homers this year, and actually pretty decent plate discipline. For a rookie, he had a 20.4% strikeout rate in the minors and a 21.8% strikeout rate in the majors so far through 55 plate appearances. So gigantic grain of salt for, you know, small plate, small sample sizes. But nonetheless, he's, you know, made a pretty decent showing so far in the majors. He was the number 3 prospect for the Reds. So it's not like this was, you know, unexpected that he was going to get the call up. The negatives, though, he is batting well below the Mendoza line. I think it's like 170 or 180. So it's not like he's just, you know, hovering at it. He is, you know, below it for sure. And this has actually really been his first game with promise. You know, 2 solo homer game is really nice. But when you play for Cincinnati and you have this kind of power, you know, the team is probably expecting a little bit more than just putting up zeros every single day. And he's still likely a player to be platooned. I think he's played in the past few games. I think he's sat 2 out of 3 games against lefties. So probably not super relevant in anything shallow than a 12 teamer. But yeah, we've been kind of talking about a lot of these guys who, you know, have 1 or 2 really good tools, but ultimately, you know, maybe are not just like decent at everything. And for players like Rodriguez, who just aren't more than just like a strong side platoon bat with power, do you think he kind of even, you know, is on your radar in a 15 teamer, or would it need to be, you know, even deeper, like an NL only league, for you to consider adding him onto a team?
Yeah, I think 15 teamer, 5 outfield in a righty heavy week, which he might get next week, would be interesting to me. But other than that, I would say NL only. The Reds are just, they got Ellie and they got Sal Stewart, which are good. They're good hitters, but it's a tough lineup. Even in that ballpark, which, you know, boosts home runs, they really have a tough time scoring runs. So you do have to kind of rely on the home run speed batting average. And I think among those three, you know, Rodriguez is a decent source of homers, but I think that's really his best tool. And it's not, you know, so exceptional that I think he needs to be added. You know, he did obviously hit the 27 in AAA, like you said, but the scouting report, you know, has him as kind of an average, you know, power guy in terms of game power and raw power. He has great bat speed, but the contact quality maybe doesn't, hasn't fully translated in terms of, you know, someone with a 75 mile per hour average swing. So yeah, I think I'm comfortable leaving him out there. Maybe if the Reds face a ton of bad righties at home, you know, maybe I'd go for him over like Lyle or Peters, those guys we talked about, but I'm not really seeing a ton here that makes me want to go out and grab him, you know, just kind of regardless of what the matchups hold.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And like, just if you just compared those three guys that we talked about, the pain that you would get with Rodriguez and in his average is just so much worse than those other two guys. So even if you say like, hey, there's a good chance for, you know, decent home runs and counting stats for a guy like Rodriguez, like that batting average is just not great right now. So if you have a couple bad days in a row, then that, you know, that could really hurt your team.
Yeah, I mean, he is at least over Mendoza after today's performance. But yeah, most projections have him, you know, 230, 240. So still a slight negative there.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitching. Brian Wu of the Mariners. 4 innings, 5 hits, 6 runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, and 2 homers. And he gave up those 2 homers on his fastball, which accounted for 5 of the 6 runs that he gave up. Granted, he did give them to Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber. So guys who just hit homers all day. So it's not necessarily super surprising that Wu gave those dingers up. But yeah, after a really shaky July, Wu seemed to be back on track in the first few starts in August before this blow up. And he has taken a pretty big step back this season, going from a 2.94 ERA to a 4.37 ERA. His other numbers like don't look terrible. He's had a really solid whip of 1.10 this season, but pretty much all his like ratios against have been really awful. His batting average against, slugging against, WOBA and BABIP all have gone up this season. You look at quality start numbers, he had 21 out of 30 last season. This year he's had 13 out of 24. So in terms of percentage of total starts, that's gone down this year as well. And it's really hard to pinpoint at least one exact reason for me when I look at his numbers, why the season hasn't gone like what we've hoped. But it's really hard to trust him on a day-to-day basis right now, just because he could just blow up at any time. And I think, you know, Nick has kind of labeled him a cherry bomb. And so, you know, one of these guys who could have really, really good starts, but at the same time could have really, really bad starts as well. He was drafted as an ace, you know, at the beginning in draft season this year. He had a 35 ADP in NFBC drafts, but it's hard to imagine that he'll be drafted that high again next season. Is there anything in your outlook that would concern you about Wu? Or is this just kind of a bad year and we should expect next year to be more in kind of the middle of what the last two seasons have been?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been frustrating. Wu is definitely a guy that I liked and have in at least a couple spots. And yeah, we've been eating a lot of these, you know, 6-5 earned run outings. It just seems like his homers are just coming at really bad times and coming with guys on base. He's not actually giving up fewer homers than he did last year, but his ERA is obviously so much worse, so it's a little bit puzzling. I guess this fly ball rate's up a little bit, which is concerning. The BABIP's, you know, career high, but also the strand rate is really low. It's 66%. So kind of the opposite of what we were talking about with Messick, is the lowest strand rate among all qualified starters at 66%. So yeah, for his career, he's a good strand guy, 74%. So I think we're gonna get some nice ERA regression next year, which maybe will have me still targeting Wu, but these health things keep popping up. You know, he kind of missed a start with this shoulder thing, and it just, and he's a guy who, I guess it was 2024 where it felt like he had left like 4 or 5 starts in the middle of them with injuries because his elbow is bothering him or his shoulder. So it's with the track record of the health and also some ERA risk, it is a little concerning here. Yeah, this one was at home too, which I thought he was untouchable at home, and then he goes and even hurts you there. So it's a little bit puzzling.
Yeah, it's kind of been a joke of just like home road splits for Wu and right, trying to figure out if he's better on the road or at home. It seemed to stabilize a little bit. He had one really good home start in the beginning of August and then 2, you know, decent away starts. Yeah, he's been kind of weird with that. I think another weird thing is just the 3% drop in strikeout rate. Don't love to see that. And you just look at his pitches across the board and they all just like a little bit worse than last year, you know, not, you know, I think the sinker and sweeper have dropped in terms of, CSW. So maybe those are kind of the culprits that you want to point to, like, oh, you know, these pitches just aren't as good this year. That's why his strikeout rate's gone down. But yeah, it does seem like at least he's giving up more hits this year. Like you mentioned, that strand rate's not great. So I wonder if that's even just just a little bit of the shaky infield behind him. And we kind of mentioned, like, they've had injuries across the board in their infield this year. And maybe that lack of continuity has hurt them a tiny bit. But yeah, just kind of weird his numbers this year, just how much that he's just kind of given up home runs and just runs at inopportune times.
Right. And going into today, he had an exactly 4-run ERA gap between his home and his road split. So they're still going to be pretty stark even after this one. It was 1.96 and 5.96 coming into today. So now it might be more like, you know, 2.8 and 5.96. So still feel great starting him at home. And I think the Mariners have the easiest schedule in the rest of the season, kind of by a mile. So maybe if he's at Coors, which I think they might have a Coors series coming up, maybe I'm a little scared of that one. But other than that, I think, you know, I'm running Wu out there pretty much every time.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for player performances. We're going to move into streamers. And yeah, we were tied, I believe, last week. Has anything changed with that record?
Yeah, it's staying at 500, so hoping to finish the year over that. But 2 weeks ago, our guys did go 2 wins, 2 losses, and a push. Other losses were Luis Castillo and Martin Perez, who had rough 2 start weeks. The wins were Hayden Wesneski, who got the win in his only start, 5 innings, 1 earned, and Kyle Leahy, who got 1 win in his 2 starts, 9 innings, 10 Ks, no earned runs. They're starting to manage his workload, though, unfortunately, because he was a reliever last year, and then Clay Holmes was the push, who only gave up 1 run in 5 1/3, but he only had 1 strikeout and a bad whip, so that's a push there. Guys last week, we'll recap them next week. It's Tyler Mahle, Anthony Kay, Andrew Alvarez, and Zach Thornton, looking like maybe 2-2, but we'll see how it ends up. And yeah, this week is going to be lefties week. There's a lot of 2 starters next week. I only have 1 here, but some good matchups all around. 2 A's to start, Gage Jump, 13%, Yahoo, 48% CBS, and Jacob Lopez, 29% Yahoo, also 48% CBS. Gage Jump gets 2 starts. It's at Texas and at Seattle, so away from the A's home park, which is great, and 2 of the best road venues in the league, which is great. He's a strikeout source with ratio volatility. 18 earned in his last 6 starts, but he also has 36 strikeouts and 31 1/3, and he had a great start last time out. Jacob Lopez is only 1 start at Texas, but he has 2 earned or fewer allowed in his last 7 starts, and he's averaging almost 7 strikeouts per start. So if you just want 1 start, I think Lopez is the guy. If you want volume more, I think it's Jump. And then a little bit of a gap to Sean Manaea of the Mets, 30% Yahoo, 53% CBS. He gets 1 start at the Rays, which they're a decent offense, but not as good against lefties, and the Trop is always a good place to pitch. Some ERA risk, but 6 innings or more in his last 6 starts with 4 quality starts. And then lastly, of the Rangers, Cody Bradford, 9% Yahoo, 23% CBS. He gets 1 home start against the A's, could be against Jumper Lopez. The A's have the worst road OPS in the league at 650, making him a cheap wins play, but the strikeout ceiling is definitely low. And then Clay Holmes is too high to be a streamer at this point in terms of rostership, but he gets a home start against the Brewers and at the Marlins. So I feel really good about that one. He's in a groove right now.
It is truly incredible how, like, good of a pitcher's park Texas has been. Like, it's just shown up this entire season of just, like, you know, we thought Seattle was good at suppressing, you know, runs, and here comes Texas, and just like, oh yeah, every pitcher there is just like, doesn't matter. You know, not necessarily doesn't matter how bad they are, but it, like, it does turn, like, pretty decent streamers into guys that, like, oh, they look great because they pitched in Texas.
Yeah, definitely some extreme venues there in the AL West. You got the A's, you know, the ball flies there, but Seattle and Texas, really tough. And yeah, Texas, last year they revitalized at least slightly Patrick Corbin's career, and now they're doing the same with Cal Quantrill. So you see any pitcher go there, I think you just got to just keep tabs on them because they could become, you know, pretty decent at least for a couple months.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for streamers and this episode. Again, you can find us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCa. You can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitchless Pro. By doing so, you can just join us in the Pitchless Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. Also, if you do have Pitchless Pro, you have access to the Pitchless Pro dashboard. And Nick just released kind of this new thing where you can kind of look at individual starts. It's called Nick's Pitcher Dashboard. Kind of utilized it today, actually, for this Brian Wu start, because it was happening in real time as I was doing the write-up. It was kind of cool to see kind of the stats that we've got just live for these pitchers. So if you have Pitchers Pro, definitely check that out. If you don't have it, go get it. We have like a promo code or something in the show notes. So yeah, but that's going to be all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John. We'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.